Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised.
10-1-1, advisory for
Yuck! Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
And we are back with another episode with a great, I think, what's going to be a great story. But we always check in. How are you, Chuck?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite retired, but still not working.
Dude, they're making me jump through hoops. I basically asked my attorneys point blank, hey, is what the department's requesting from me right now, is it the last ditch effort to try to get me to like not file or not be able to go through with my medical pension? And they're like, well, they're just wanting to make sure because of when your injury claim was and when your actual injury was, they want to see all the medical records for Tama. I'm like, okay, so that you can just be straight with me, dude. Just be like, yeah, they're trying to fucking find any way to get you not to be able to claim this shit because right. I got injured a year prior, I guess. Or I was seeking a doctor because I was having back issues a year prior to my back completely going out and filing a fucking work claim. But wow. I was the whole way up to it. Like all my documents say, police officer, police officer, police officer, police officer, police officer, police. They have all these records. And I'm like, dude, this is bullshit. So that's going through. It's not yet approved or anything like that. I still got to go see some doctors through. What is it? The city, they're agreed upon doctors through the city, but they don't work for the city. And you got to see 2 to 3 of them in a week's time.
Something expert, qualified medical expert, QME.
Yeah, it's similar to QME, but because I already got an AME to saw it and signed off and everything. And so, yeah, I think it's like a QME adjacent. But they don't work for the city. So they find them and they use them, but it's so stupid. Yeah. And I'm like, they're in their pocket. And I'm like, man, like if I could come back and look and push in black and white and be able to run and not have my leg swell up and not have my knee bend the opposite direction because they relocated it, I would love to. But the chances of that, like, I can't, it's not going to work. It's just,
you know, there's been enough doctors telling you, yeah, that's never going to happen. So don't worry.
Yeah, so I'm not really worried about it. You know, I'm on I just got put on long-term disability and finishing school again for the second time, second bachelor's degree. Yay.
Well, here we are with this week. Why don't you tell us, tell everybody why I'm so excited for this one, why we are so excited for this one.
So we have Sean Haggerty. Sean, welcome. He's a retired special operations soldier with over 25 years of experience. He spent his younger years training and conducting combat operations with the 1st of the 75th Ranger Regiment. After 9 years, in 2005, he was selected for an assignment to the Special Operations Unit at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. There he spent 16 years and finished his military career, retiring as a sergeant major, and he is currently a senior advisor for the DOD. He wrote a book. And the book has been described as The Sound of Freedom, Taken, Jack Reacher, and John Wick all rolled into one. And we'll get to that towards the end. So it's pretty badass. It's from what I've read on here that I was given, the synopsis and everything. It's just, it's pretty awesome.
Well, here's what I can say. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you.
The more times we say special, the less story we're able to get.
Right.
So I know you had said there's some stuff we cannot talk about. So we'll just tell the audience right out of the gate. There will be times where we'll get to a really cool, theoretically cool part of the story, and we can't even discuss it. We'll ask a question and be like, yeah, I can't say anything about that.
Yeah, we'll delve in, but we just might have to keep some particular details out. So I can, give some overviews, but I cannot get into specifics, obviously.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. That leaves some mystique, though. You know, leaves it up to imagination, which I think is just part of the fun.
Well, sometimes it's worse.
Right. Well, you know, here's one thing I learned about public information and in a PIO class that my my old man used to teach. He told me, he said, son, you got to tell them something or they'll just make it up.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah. So anyway,
control the narrative.
He's right. Well, yeah. Oh, anyway, I don't even, you know what, with what's going on at my job, I don't even want to talk about controlling the narrative right now. Let's just have some fun. So, Sean, you 25 years, and you still work, you're still working for the government, right?
Well, you know, I got a mortgage to pay. So,
right. You know, how much can we talk about what you do now?
Oh, anything I want to do now. So I'm the senior advisor to what's called the Defense Science Board. It's the oldest advisory committee for the Department of Defense. I think it's over 65 years old.
Started now, when you say Defense Science Board, all I think of is DARPA.
We talk to DARPA a lot. DARPA comes in. It's basically the board is made up of your scientific community, retired generals, usually four stars, directors of labs like Lincoln Labs, Livermore, and basically SecDef or Deputy SecDef goes down through the Undersecretary for R&E and says, here's a huge problem. We want you guys to sit for a year, talk to everybody across the community and try to come up with an answer. And my job is to herd those cats and also coming from the special operations community, that's a community that has not been as tied in as tight with the Pentagon. So I have working minor personal relationships, like I'm not on like speed dial with General Fenton, but I know him. So if I call him and ask him to come help with this, he will. So that's right. What I kind of do is kind of bring what they're doing. So no one's working in a vacuum, right?
Right.
And then they make
get rid of the silos.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to do. And it's been painful, but fun.
Well, I can imagine working in that realm, you're dealing with a lot of engineer type people, let's say.
Yes.
People that are maybe a little bit on the spectrum or have a smidge of the tism.
I don't know. I'm not going to say that because the chairman of the board will probably hear this one day and kill me. Sure, but I'm dealing with people that are sometimes, you know, the old saying, curiosity killed the cat, right?
Right.
They want every single piece. I have got to know every single thing. And I'm like, do you really? Do you really need it? Can we get a good enough solution without me hunting down every single SME out there in the secret SAP TS world?
That's one thing about that. What's one thing about engineers and people of that world? They do not like the unknown. They do not like unanswered questions. They despise that stuff. They have a hard time playing in the gray area. And one of the things that I used to tell all my trainees, and I've said it's on the show numerous times, but the only thing black and white about the job of a police officer is the fucking cars, right? Everything else is in the gray. And the same thing.
Spirit of the law and letter of the law.
Yeah, it's funny. My sister's a cop, and I've heard her say that phrase before. So I've heard it. It's completely great.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sean, have you met General Mad Dog Mattis?
Chuck's a Marine, so he has to ask every guest.
I'm sorry, I have not met him. And again, you're a Marine. I'm a Ranger. We speak the same language, but we have not. I have not sat down and actually talked to the man. I've heard good things, but I've never talked to him.
Damn, I was hoping because you said you talked to SecDefs and you know assistant SecDef and everything, and I was like, oh man, I wonder if you met him.
No. I've only been in this job about 6 months. Retired about 2.5 years ago, and my op tempo was so absolutely insane that I thought it'd be a really good idea to go the opposite end of the spectrum. And I sat for 2 years as a contractor writing Army policy.
Oh my God.
Lord. Oh yeah.
Part of my job is to write policy and I feel your pain.
Oh, it was terrible. So I was like, oops, I went a little too far. I had to swing that pendulum back this job came available.
Yeah. At least I'm not only doing that, but I feel your pain. If I had to only it's a small part of my job, but it is enough of a small part that if I could excise it like a tumor, I would. The problem is that I'm actually good at it. And so I don't mind the typing. It's the going to the meetings and discussing stuff ad nauseum and going round and round about whether it's should or shall or may or will or, you know, all that. Ugh.
And that's why I kept my pencil very sharp at my desk.
Right. John Wick style. John Wick style.
Oh, I meant like
pencil.
Yeah.
It was a great job. It was great people, but yeah. It was just not my world. Coming from a ground pounder world.
Sure.
I don't mind the meetings. I was used to that, but oh my God. Yeah. Pole vaulting over mouse turds. I'm like, let's just get
that's okay. A great
analogy. I'm gonna pocket that one. Yep, that one's going in there. Okay. So let's start with a little bit of housekeeping. How did you get into the service? How did you start? Where did this all come from?
So very funny.
You don't have to spend a whole,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. No, it's actually funny. So I was in school at University of Michigan. I was about a year out for graduation, and I was actually looking into law enforcement. I had been speaking with the Detroit cops and Chicago. So I got temporary hired at both. Okay. This is back in 96. But I deferred and I said, I want to do service. I'm not making it a lifestyle. I want to serve. I signed up for 2 years. I said, that's it. Maybe I don't know the German concept, whatever. I just feel like able-bodied male. I should step up and serve and get some experience. And then I loved it. And then I stayed. Other reasons I stayed, but we'll get into that later. But it just is one of those cascading. I looked down and was like, I'm at 20, I think it was 24 and a half when I finally dropped paperwork. I was like, I'm not going any higher.
Oh, wow. Right.
I'm beat up. I need to get some surgeries and I need to get out in the civilian world and start again. So that's how I ended up there. Again, I could have been a Detroit cop and they were ready to send me to the academy. And I said, hey, I signed up to, actually, I went blind. I was supposed to go to 101st. This is actually kind of a funny story. So in basic training, one of the drill sergeants came up to me at my bunk. He was an old Panama Ranger. He's like, Haggerty.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's like, Haggerty, where are you going? I go, 101st drill sergeant. He's like, you want a Ranger contract? I look at the guy to my left. This guy had to wear, he brought a red silk kimono to basic training. So
No shit.
What?
He duck walked every night around the billets. I look over at him. I'm like, where are you going? He goes, 101st. I looked at the guy on my right. He looked like he'd been kicked by a mule. I go, where are you going? He goes, 101st. Hey, drill sergeant, I'll take that Ranger contract.
Holy shit.
That's exactly how I ended up there. They're like, all right, you're going. They changed my paperwork that day. Next day, I went off to airborne school and then Ranger indoctrination right after that.
Wow.
So you went straight. You went cold into Ranger indox and just
straight passed with
flying colors. And
we'll say I squeak by, but. I didn't recycle anything, bro. I made it through.
Yeah. That's pretty good. That's intense.
Did you pass?
Yeah. So I got in there and then
I don't care what your score was. You passed, right?
Oh yeah, passed. Exactly. Right. D plus is still a doctor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. We've talked to many, I've never heard such a quick, I fell into it.
Yeah.
Story.
Just kind of like, I'm not going with this fucking guy. I'll take the Ranger contract.
Although that does kind of remind me, our friend and our former co-host who's been a guest on the show several times since, John, he went 101st and he went in to sign up right before, during Afghanistan. He goes in and he says, they said, there's a $30,000 signing bonus if you want to go into combat. And he's like, well, that's why I'm here. So... You didn't have to offer me the money. I wanted to go to combat, so fine. And so he signs up. He's 101st air assault, and he gets there, and they're like, by the way, we're deploying. And he's like, oh, so we have to do some training about no, now. And so he did all of his training and all of his first, air assault shit with the helicopters and stuff in country because there was no time to get him prepped. They just left.
He had about.
So it's time now.
I remember this going on. He had about 3 months after, 3 months after passing his A school, and left, and then went to his unit. He had about two and a half, 3 months, and then they were leaving.
Gone. Yeah.
And it was wild, and he was there for I think 18 months.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. My first rotation there, I remember having to break it to some of my privates that, hey, that's cool. You've been doing a great thing in country for 3 months. You have to leave. I have to send you home to Ranger school to go to a school to make you a combat leader. But as stupid as that sounds, you also, again, a lot of people don't realize, you know, people confuse Ranger School and Ranger Regiment, right? Two totally different animals, right, unfortunately, right, share the same name. But in Ranger Regiment, especially on the infantry side, again, this is when I was there. So I've been out of there for a little bit, so things may have changed. But if you're in the line, you can't promote to sergeant, staff sergeant, platoon sergeant, unless you have your, you know, you've gone to school and you've got your tab. Right. So right. I have to send that E3 because he's got to replace me someday. So if I don't send him back from combat to go to a school, I'm not grooming the future leaders. So
right. It makes sense. It seems bass-ackwards until you, Well, I'll tell you what, I worked with cops who had been in the field training officer program before they ever went to the police academy, if you can believe that.
What?
Yeah.
It's freaking wild. What?
I worked with a cop. Specifically, his name was Fred. I won't give his last name for, you know, whatever. But I talked to him one time and he's like, I was in a car for 6 months before the academy opened up. And so he was riding around in uniform with a gun with a field training officer for 6 months doing the work. And then the academy spot opened up and they're like, okay, we're sending you to the academy now. This was not in California, by the way.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it happens. Anyway, so you go to the Rangers.
Yep.
And you spent all 25 years there?
No. I was at 175 from April 97. I got there. I left in September 03. Back in the day, its names have changed. It was went to regimental headquarters and it was a regimental training detachment. And I did two years there to get my kind of instructor time and to train to go to selection to go to up to USASOC.
Oh wow!
So you've been there.
Well, I had two knee surgeries and then I started training.
But you know what? Training after knee surgeries is almost harder.
Well, actually, I was fortunate at the time. By the time I was healed up, so when Ranger Regiment does their best Ranger competition, mm-hmm. guys come from all the battalions and they actually come to Benning and train all together at RTD and they pick the best team. So since I was there at, I was like the XO, it was all NCO run. I got to go out training with them. So I actually was going running and training with these guys, not to go to Best Ranger, cause that's just absolutely crazy, but to go to selection. So I actually got to train, see different types of exercises, different types of kind of regimens. So it was kind of cool.
So now I real quick, because we need to get to your story.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the women that went to Ranger School? Do you know anything about it? How does that sit with Rangers? Because I've talked to some guys that have said some things, but I'm curious what your thoughts are.
So my honest thoughts are this. It's a school. It's an Army school for an achievement award. If females want to go to that school and can achieve and meet the standards, so they can get the same thing as promotion points, God bless them. I got no problem with it. Mm-hmm. You want to serve on the line in an infantry unit, that's where I sit there and go, I'm not saying you can't do it. Should we do it?
Right.
Right.
You know, is it necessary? And how many, this is going to come out bad, but how many accommodations do we have to make that's going to disrupt the entire integrity of a squad? And I'm not saying a female can't slip in. Hey, I love the Alien movies. Space Marines were great. But is that realistic? Do we really need to do it? I know the Israelis have done it. I know the Russians have done it. And I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm saying, do we have to do it? And are we ready as a society?
Right? Well,
we've got different kind of cultural.
I can tell you this, that it would lead to a lot of shitting where you eat type of scenarios, right? And a lot of beefs coming down the pipe, because I got out in 2010? No, 11. I got out in 2011 and they were opening up, because I was amphibious assault vehicles, and they were talking about adding women to the line platoons as mechanics to work on the tracks. And I was like, oh fuck, this is an all male MOS. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, mechanics. And then they were talking about putting chicks into amphibious assault vehicles, which I actually think they have a couple now since I've been out. But I was talking to one of the mechanics that was coming down the pipe and they're like, no, we're actually going to be getting some females. And I was like, asking if they thought it was a good idea. And they're like, I can't wait to be able to, you know, and this is going to come out really crude, to have sex with some of these chicks coming down. I'm like, that's the mentality already coming in your guys' head. This is going to lead to such bad outcomes. And, you know, we already know that there is sexual assault that happens in the military.
Oh yeah.
It happens in a lot of co-ed fucking things, you know, and stuff like that in both male and female.
I was going to say, I don't look at it in that sense. I look at it in this.
Oh,
both you in combat and a female, and all three of you get hit. And it's going to be my inherent nature
to protect her.
Treat her first.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
Sexist, that's what I'm worried about.
Sexist. That's just what's that's ingrained in our nature, right?
Right.
If I don't hold the door for a woman, I know somewhere, even if she can see me or not, my mom's going to kick me in the back of the head, right?
Yeah.
Right. How we were raised. So that's where I think was going to be the problem. I'm over there treating this, and this other guy's bleeding out, and I should have paid more attention to him triaging, but I wouldn't because of my inherent nature. Again,
if you have a woman in your squad and the fire starts, your first thought might be, oh God, should we protect her? Like, we got
to work nature to protect, be a protector.
Right. Exactly. Now the Russians, to your point, I'll say this before we get to your story, cause we're getting way off track, but
that's
when World War II was over, those badass Russian bitches who fought in World War II were like, we are going back home to raise children. We are not in, you know what I mean? Like it was, we are doing this now because we are hard Russian women protecting the motherland. But when the war is over, we are going back. It's, I kind of equate it to the women who were like, the men went off to war, we're going to make airplanes and machine guns in the factories. And then when the men come home, they're like, okay, great. We're awesome. We're going to go back to raising children and supporting our husbands and running a house and doing all that. Well, you know, it's similar, I think, to that. It was out of necessity versus if a woman wants to, great, I understand. But, you know, there's that dynamic that is inherent in us that would change, period. So,
well, and also, can they throw 250 pounds on their back with all battle rattle and be able to pull you to safety?
If they can, cool. That's the thing. If they can, I'm all for it.
I worked with a lot of badass chicks.
My stance would always be as, hey, if we need to do it, I understand, especially like that more women have made military profession. I'm all about it. They should have all the opportunities to get promotion points, but I'm with you. If they can't pull me and a Skidco off the battlefield, then they have no business being there.
Can you do the job? That's my concern.
Once you can do the job, I'm cool with it.
Yeah. That was what my guys that I talked to said. If they can pass Ranger school without any adjustments to the test, fine. Absolutely.
You deserve to be there at that point. No. Like, yeah. So.
All right. So we've digressed enough. The floor is yours. Let's have it. What's your story?
What's my story? So anything
you want to talk about, like anything that comes to mind, that stands out to you, an experience you had, whether it's funny, whether it's crazy, whatever you want to.
So it's funny you say that. Actually, when I was first getting out, a friend of mine had a website called militarysatire.com. It has since closed. And she was selling like funny t-shirts. I actually went to a Ranger Regiment reunion last weekend. I wore my Blue Falcon t-shirt and everybody got a laugh out of that. But what I did there for a little while on that, maybe about 10, 15 different, I wrote a blog. And what I did though was kind of try to tell some of like the humorous sides, because like you hear all these guys come on and talk about, you know, I was, you know, knee deep in grenade pins, and don't get me wrong, the stories are great, but there's kind of a comical side. Like my first firefight, there was more laughter than anything else, laughing at each other. It was serious, but it was comical. Maybe it was the way everybody dealt with the stress,
right?
Maybe that's how guys dealt with the emotion. But I could never. So my first firefight I ever got into, I had to unass the vehicle. We were in a bad spot. They got us. They got us in the perfect spot. Vehicles could barely move. So we had to get out.
Sure.
And I run like 10 feet and get down behind a rock. And I'm like, wow, that shit came fast. And I was a squad leader and my team leader was promotable. And there was no squad leader positions in the platoon. So he was going to have to move out in a couple months to another platoon. And I had a machine gun on my rock. I mean, my rock went from a huge rock. It's getting smaller and smaller. And I'm looking back at him and the rest of the team at the vehicle. And I'm like, I won't also use last names. I know he wouldn't care. I'm like, Brian, are you going to put down some cover fire? No, I want your job. I was like, you asked. And he's like, all right, stop being such a puss. But I don't think people understand that there is comedy in there, and not to take combat lightly or scenarios. I'm sure you guys have been in, but as a stress reliever, as everybody laughed, everybody kind of relaxed.
Gallows humor.
I got out from behind the rock. I'm here.
Yeah,
so right.
It allows you to think clearly under stress too. If you break that and you break that tunnel vision, and you can bring in the humorous portion of the light and the levity of everything, and you can get people to stop freaking the fuck out. They can actually do their jobs.
Yeah, efficiently. Yeah. Find their calm.
Yeah.
So right. He did it. It was pretty funny, but that is a very vivid memory for me. My first experience of Brian wanting my job. So that was like one of my blogs. But the blog was, I want your job. And I kind of gave a, you know, one page summary of what happened that day.
Well, what happened?
Oh, we got out. We were good. Actually, we were very, very fortunate. Nobody got hit. I know this one guy, what the hell was his name? He jumped out of the truck. He was a saw gunner. His gun got shot out of his hand. Oh, and then shit. They shot a hole through his camelback. So he turned and he jumped right back in the truck. He was like, this is not my day.
I got no gun.
So, damn. You know, just same thing. We had a Mark 19 gunner. Mm-hmm. He was this kid from the Caribbean. He was from from St. Croix. And I remember I used to tell him, I'm like, you are the dumbest private I've ever met. Why did you ever leave that island? And you're stuck here on the top of a vehicle getting shot at in the middle of Afghanistan.
Right.
I've been to your island. I'm like, it's beautiful. What are you doing here? Oh, you're so funny. No, like, you're like, really.
Yeah, well, seriously.
I think you're touched.
Funny. funny you say that. You had a dude from the Caribbean, and he was just not all there, not very smart. We had a dude from St. Lucia, and this dude would walk around with a fucking steak knife through the webbing of his flak jacket every time we went out. Fucking steak knife. And they were like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, it's my knife. Like, motherfucker, that's a steak knife to cutting meat. Like, what the? It's all serrated. What are you going to do? He's like, no, it's my knife.
That's for cutting meat.
Just, I'm like, I mean, oh my God. Just
people are meat.
Fuck me. Yeah.
The shit. Well, you know, too, at least in the Ranger Regiment, one of the dirty little secrets was, you know, now everybody in the military carries a hatchet. But we carried them back in the day because our vehicles didn't have doors. So you go through some of those little villages, there's a ton of wild dogs that'll come running up at your
car
trying to bite at you. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to shoot it with your shotgun? Are you going to, you know, unsling your rifle? Some whack and shuck, not too bad, but again, maybe an ear, but we're trying whack to kill them. But that's where actually, at least in my experience, that came from is defending ourselves in the vehicles from animals. Because we're, I mean, especially, oh God, Iraq. If you get up to Kurdistan, those dogs are huge. They're like bears.
So
I forgot their names, but they're huge.
So we used to, we've talked about that on the show a couple of times. We had some guys talk about the wild dogs in Iraq and you know, what they would do with piss bottles, throwing them outside the wire and watching them attack each other to you know, pieces. And one of our coppers, Elliot, that's been on the show a bunch of times, he said, oh yeah, it's kind of like the ghetto elk. And ghetto elk is the term that cops use for the giant stray dogs that grow up in the ghetto parts of town, because people buy a pit bull or something and then they can't take care of it, and they just let it loose, and then it ends up procreating and they create these giant mongrel dogs that roam the ghetto, and it's just huge beasts that, like, I mean, what are you gonna do if the thing comes towards you? You gotta kill it. There's nothing else you could do.
Well, the other problem, especially, I don't know about your ghetto elks, but over there too, they carried a lot of disease. So we'd be real careful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, getting that into camps, or if we're on an ORP or something, and wild dogs coming in. Next thing we don't need to be out in the field for a week and guys are getting some sort of bugs or some sort of, you know.
Right. And we're not talking about one stray dog growling at you. We're talking about a pack that
they
will rip you limb from limb. Yes. In seconds.
Dude, my neighbor down the fucking street. I'm starting to go on walks.
don't know.
And I'm having to go packing heat because this fucking guy is breeding pits. And these aren't normal pit bulls. These are like the pit bulls bred with like fucking bull mastiffs.
Well, I was going to say, in your area, this is entirely possible he's breeding them for dogfighting.
I was going to say, I got two pit bulls here in the house, and they're the sweetest
dogs. They're the sweetest dogs. We can go on and on about that. It's the owner,
of course.
But, except for Chihuahuas. Then it's just
No, that's all Chihuahua. That's Satan's child.
I always say my wife has a Chihuahua Shih Tzu. If we put its brain into my 95-pound German Shepherd, we'd all be dead.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. So, Sean, you've spent a lot of time downrange. It's fair to say.
A fair amount, yes.
I'm gonna start it with this. What was one of the most intense situations you had faced downrange?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I was on an operation in northern Iraq, and we were working with one group of friendlies, and we were chasing a general from another country that should not have been there trying to kill our people. And we moved into the territory of another group of friendlies and did not coordinate said movement. And I say we. The collective we, because I at the time had absolutely nothing to do with this coordination.
right.
And we found ourselves driving away from the objective in about six to eight Jeep Cherokees, and got stopped and were surrounded by probably 200, at least 200 of them. And we were three men to a Cherokee. So do the math. We were grossly outnumbered. And I remember just sitting there looking, and I look out my right of the window, and there's a dude, and he's got his full jihadist mask on, ski mask, like he's going to rob the bank. And he was holding an RPG. And my first thought was, dude, you're like 10 feet from me. This is going to kill both of us.
right.
So I looked over at the driver, and leaders had got out and were start talking, but like, they're all still guns trained on us. So again, I tried to use levity, and I just slowly rolled up my window. And I'm pretty sure that dude laughed too, that window was going to stop nothing. But I was like, let's everybody defuse. But it was just one of those situations where, again, working in it, nothing against privates, but when you talk about experience, is I was waiting for like one inexperienced private with his finger on the trigger, to pull that slack out and start a firefight that we would have grossly lost. I mean, we were trapped. Thankfully, like I said, leadership got out, everybody talked. I'm sure they had tea at some point while we sat in the car and sweat. But after about a 2-hour standoff, we got out of there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was so it didn't kick off, but it felt like it was going to.
We were just kind of waiting. Just like, wow, this is where we go. Wow. This is not good.
That's such an interesting moment too. We've talked about that on this show numerous times, but that moment of realization, that moment of reality setting in where you go, okay, here we go. Like this is the moment we've trained for. This is where it's like that light switch flipping on where it's not time to talk about it anymore. It's actually time to just do it. And everything kind of falls into place and you just do, right? You don't. Yeah.
Well, it didn't hit us until later. Didn't hit me in the moment. 2 hours, 3 hours later, back at base, taking all my kit off, sitting on my bunk and just kind of, trying to get a beer. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
Right then it kind of hits you like your adrenaline. Like,
here we go.
Pushes out. And you're finally like, what just happened? Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a moment that you thought, this is it? This is how I go. This is where I'm buying it.
I was in a situation in a foreign country that there was a revolution and I did not know. And I was driving to the embassy that morning and I'm seeing the smoke and I'm seeing just total revolution, coup, whatever you want to call it. And all of a sudden I'm dead stop in traffic and soldiers are just walking down the line, executing people.
Oh,
I'm like, ooh, this is, I'm in a bad way. Wait a minute. I'm not supposed, now I had up armored. And I eventually got out of there, but yeah, they were executing, pulling people out of cars, executing and stealing their cars. They just went total blood diamond on them. Everybody, it was crazy.
Now, was this a political coup that was happening with the actual military was taking over and revolting. Is that
part of the military? Yeah, the regular army overthrew the government and was trying to kill all the what they would consider maybe special operations for their country. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, I was not a target. I think it was one of those bunch of drunk soldiers, 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, shed their uniforms, you know, no direction, no leadership.
We should start a coup.
Yeah, let's just start shooting. They weren't mad at us. You know, they weren't mad necessarily at Americans. I think when they found out later, they were like, oh, crap, don't shoot at the Americans. This could be bad. They may come back with full force. But it was just one of those situations where, yeah, it just all went to shit. And like I said, thankfully, I had the up armored. I mean, they hit it, but it didn't do anything. So I just was like,
So they actually did take fire from them.
Oh yeah, no, the car got hit quite a few times, but it muscled through. That's why even today, in my driveway, sitting a Toyota. I will never drive anything. I'm from Detroit, and I will drive nothing but a Toyota because those things are unstoppable.
Well, I mean, let me guess, Toyota is the
armored Toyota.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a Hilux, so yeah, you couldn't stop it. Unarmored, you can't stop those things.
I was going to say Toyota's the preferred truck of many a second and third world military. Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Oh yeah.
Well, they love their
the guy we just had on from who was in Syria, and he was working in a FOB with the special forces. That's all they drove were the Hiluxes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all we drove. Yeah. Not like I said, Hiluxes cannot be stopped.
Right. Now you were with the Ranger regiment, and you were also with special operations. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a question for both. I'm sure you've seen shenanigans being played on, you know, the new guys coming in, the fucking boots or whatever you want to call it. Now, in special operations, I wouldn't consider them a boot at any means necessary because you have to have some fucking skills to get in there. But you're going to have new guy shenanigans that you're going to be playing. What is the one of the funniest things from both the Ranger Regiment, more of the regular army as opposed to the special forces side? What are the things that you've seen that are like just crazy funny and just wild?
I will say on the special operations side, I really didn't see a lot of it. It really was. I mean, everybody was pretty high ranking NCOs. Ranger Regiment. Oh, for the love of God, the things that they would do to people. A lot of it wasn't even the newbies. So in regiment, like even when I got there, so I was Charlie Company 175, they could pick on me. But nobody else, like Bravo Company, couldn't touch me. ACO, better not touch me. Even 3rd Platoon, I was in 2nd Platoon at the time, better not screw with their guy. They were very protective.
Got it.
I'd come. So again, I was married when I came in, so I didn't live in the billets. So I'd come in the morning at 5:30. I remember I used to have an argument with my platoon sergeant a couple times, a lot of push-ups later. I'd come in because I had to be there 45 minutes early to clean the billets. And I was like, why am I coming in here to clean up these idiots' beer bottles
in
their laundry room? Are you coming to my house on the weekend and mowing my lawn? And that was usually a lot of push-ups. Because I graduated college, so it doesn't make me better. Just I had different experiences. So I was a little bit older. So I'd drive up, park my car, and I'm walking in, and there's like a dude naked, upside down, duct taped to a tree. And I'm looking at this guy. And I just go, I'll allow it. Whatever. Not my guy. Not my place.
Right.
But that's, I mean, the guys that, especially those of us that didn't live in the billets. So I was on the second floor. There was ropes out the window because sergeants lived in the barracks. The platoon sergeant released you for the day, and then they just smoke you all day long. You had to go out a rope out the window just to get the hell out of there. It's hilarious, but that's just the way it was. So they tortured and abused their own only to make them stronger. But you were still part of the family. Any other company or platoon even looks at one of your guys and they're going to do something. I would not stray over into Biko's area when I was in E4. No. Not until I was at least in E6 could I stray into that area and I'm untouchable.
Is that because it was like the Ranger Regiment? Because I know like in an NCO, E4 NCO, like a fucking corporal, if you were to walk from one side to the other, you're going to be respected, at least in the Marine Corps where I was at. You'd be respected to a point.
Ish.
Going from one Ish. To a point. From one point to the other. You couldn't touch the other fucking people. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No. That's their people. They deal with them. But it wasn't like you couldn't stray into there. Is it just different because it was...
Well, Regiment? So again, in Ranger Regiment, I was an E4 specialist, but I was untabbed. Once I got my tab, then I became a corporal. Then I was a junior NCO. And then, yeah, I could walk. I could walk by their areas. Yeah, a lot of it too in regiments, if you have a tab or not. Again, my information may be dated. I left there in 2006. But at the end of the time, you didn't have your tab. You weren't shit. You were, because like I said, I was an E4, but I was still considered a private until I got my tab.
I would guess that if we were to ask currently, if you don't have your tab, you ain't shit. That would be my guess. I'm not saying. I know that for a fact.
I'm pretty sure that hasn't changed.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because those same kinds of arguments, you know, still take place. Like, you know, in police departments, if you got your SWAT epaulette, you know, and you don't have your SWAT epaulette, you know, then the guys are, you know, but then the narco guys, they don't have to wear uniforms and they got goatees and long hair. And they're like, you fuck your SWAT epaulette. I get to, you know.
Well, I mean, you have to look at it this way too. I was an E4 because I had a college degree, but they'd be an E3, but if he's tabbed, he'd smoke my ass.
Right.
Right. So, oh yeah. I'd be getting half left face, elevate your feet, whatever the hell from an E3 until you had your tab, your rank didn't matter. So going to Ranger school at Ranger Regiment was basically continuing the cycle of violence, as I like to put it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It makes sense because my boy Kearney, we went to a boot camp together, and right when he got out of boot camp, they're like, hey, they picked him up, put him straight into recon. Like, no, you're going to recon. Fuck your school. You're going to recon. Cause this dude was a machine. He went to recon and he was there for about a year going through schools, going through all this shit, but he had not yet been, it's equivalent to like the tab of being a ranger. He had not yet gotten that recon certification.
Yeah.
Like, he was not a recon Marine. He has been going through the schools. He's been passing everything. He was a fucking stud. He got into one issue with someone the same rank who was already in recon. They bounced that bitch out, shoved him into our unit. And I was like, God dang, Kearney, what the fuck? Long time no see. What happened? He's like, oh, I was in recon. And I was like, no shit. What? And he told me, I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, damn, but you were there for like a long time. He was like, you know, he's like, yeah, but I just hadn't made it yet. And I just mouthed off to the wrong motherfucker. And we fought and they bounced my ass out like fucking like bad news.
Yeah, bye-bye. That happens. That happens.
Now,
well, I had a question.
Go for it.
Mine's probably real quick. Yeah. With all the countries you've been to.
Okay.
Is there, I would love to know, where's the one that you would go back to in a hot second and the one that you couldn't pay you enough to go back to?
That's a good one.
So you couldn't pay me to go back to anywhere in the Middle East?
Anywhere.
Anywhere.
Not one place.
Just where I've been, the Iraqs, the Afghanistan, just complete and utter, to me, chaos and hot garbage.
Right.
I spent a lot of time on the continent of Africa, and that is probably now my solid favorite outside of course this one. I love that. I've been to 5-6 countries in Africa. All the cultures are different. The food's amazing. The people are amazing. Yeah, there's some hot spots and some violence. Just put that aside. It's always been. I've told my wife that my dream is to be able to take her and see some parts of that continent, because I think it's just gorgeous. I loved it. I spent some time in Kenya. Absolutely adored Kenya. Even some of the hot spots I've been to that I won't name, still some of the most beautiful areas.
Yeah, we can probably guess if you're saying Africa, what some of those spots would be.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I would guess one of those spots might rhyme with Shwawanda.
No. But yeah, I mean, it's a surreal experience over there. I mean, going out in safaris and going up and seeing volcanoes and climbing mountains, you know, because we had time off. So we didn't just sit in our barracks all day long. So
I think people, when they think of Africa, they forget that, first of all, Morocco and Egypt and Tunisia are in Africa, but there's also Mount Kilimanjaro and Victoria Falls. And all they think of Africa, all they think of is the savannah in The Lion King. And that's it, right?
But even that's cool. I mean, I've actually, and I'm really upset because about 5 years ago, I had a hard drive totally zoo out. I actually went to a animal rescue. And by the way, the rules over there with zoos are very, very loosey-goosey.
The rules are in quotation fingers.
It cost me about $10 American to go in a cage and play with three full-grown cheetahs.
What?
They were raised, you know, they found them out in the safari, you know, out in the desert. So they were completely docile. I mean, I'm like playing tug of rope with like a 90-pound cheetah. It was hilarious. I got to feed a baby lion. It was amazing.
Tiger King stuff right there.
It was totally Tiger King stuff. I thought about taking over, but I didn't have a Puma and Simone or whatever the hell the other ones are. I didn't have the crew to do it. Right. But actually funny is I actually got accidentally hit by a tiger, by a lion. So they had this 1-year-old. He was up on an elevated bench. And they opened the cage, which was basically chicken wire. So I don't know what it was doing. And they gave me a big metal bowl. And I would put, they had cut slabs, maybe 8 ounces, put it on the wood, and the lion's paw would grab it and eat it. Well, he was getting kind of rhythmic, and we got off, and I put a piece down, and he hit my right hand, and he sliced it all open. And the zookeepers went crazy because the lion ate the meat and then kind of looked up because he could smell the blood. And they're all like rushing me out of the cage as I'm bleeding all over the place. And I'm like, this is bad. How am I going to explain what just happened in my hand? A little bit of cellulitis later, a couple shots, an IV bag or two, it healed. But yeah, just accidentally pawed me when I was.
I think that's what people understand is your house cat and a lion are pretty much the same animal. Just the ability for a lion to playfully scratch you.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can just cause a lot, like a little house cat gives you 3 scratches. You put a little Bactine or some Neosporin on it and you're good to go.
Yeah.
But if a lion does that exact same thing, he's going to shred your hand. So,
yeah, it shredded my hand.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a lot of that. How many countries have you been to roughly?
So between personal and courtesy of Uncle Sam, I think I'm at 42.
Holy shit. Mm.
I think I was counting the other day, actually, my wife and I, because we were talking about some travel we wanted to do next year, and she had a map out. She said, where have you actually been? I'm like, oof, actually a lot of places, because there's other things too. I mean, not just war zones. I mean,
sure.
I've been to London for training. I did the 61st celebration for Normandy. So I got France. Ooh. I did an exercise once in Germany. We were like Canary Islands once for like 2 days for a stop.
Oh my God. I mean,
just strange places.
Right.
Air Force aircraft tended to break down when you're flying back and forth from overseas in the nicest places. It's weird, right? Weird. I mean, our hydraulics are out for 3 days on these gorgeous beaches. Okay, thanks, Air Force.
Have you ever been to this? I'm going to probably butcher this. This Seychellian Islands. I think that's off the North Africa.
I have not. I know where isn't that where Osama was from?
I don't know. I know all the Marines who went on.
Yeah, I have not been there.
Loved it. And they're like, that's the best place. If you're ever going to Mute, fucking get on one that goes to the Seychellian Islands.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's the best. And I was like, damn, dude, that sounds awesome. I was just wondering if you went.
Surprisingly enough, I've never been on a ship. Unless, you know, a little tour up in Baltimore.
Go on a fucking ship. They're fucking horrible. And you get sick and it's disgusting and it's nasty. Well, we get put in the shitty spots. I don't know where you guys would go.
I don't want to go for like 8 months. I want to go for like a week, you know, a good solid week, maybe. That's about it. I don't want to go for an entire float.
We spent one on like two weeks to a month on a fucking ship or some shit like that. I don't know. It was a fucking little bit. It wasn't crazy long, but it was the worst time I've ever had on a ship. And really? I found out that I'm severely seasick. And it's funny because we were amphibious and all we did was play in the ocean. And it was just disgusting. Now, my question is for you. You've been in a long, long time. Sergeant Major, freaking Ranger, Special Operations. What's your most memorable experience?
Ooh. I'm actually going to have to go with what I mentioned earlier. My most memorable experience was actually participating in the 61st celebration of Normandy. And the reason was because, one, it was odd. At the time, I was working at RTD, and it was during the surge. And so actually at the time, he was Major Vanek. He is now, I think he retired out as Colonel Vanek. I think he had one of the regiments. Anyway, he calls me up and say, Hag, can you come over to headquarters? And I come over there, and he's like, hey, man, he was the S3 Air. He's like, I am swamped. And they have given me this liaison thing to do for the 61st invasion of Normandy. I do not have the time. Can you take it for me? Can you ask your... So at the time, RTD...
Say less.
But yeah, exactly. It was run by a commandant, by a sergeant major. So I went back. I was like, sergeant major, can I do this? He's like, as long as you cover your duties. I got to go to Paris probably 6 times just in prep for this thing.
Wow.
I got a history lesson that I can never, ever forget. At the time, he was the... Ambrose had since passed, but he had been the main historical research for Stephen.
Oh, yeah. Ambrose. Yeah. Ambrose. For those of you who don't know, Stephen Ambrose wrote Band of Brothers.
Yep.
He wrote a book on Eisenhower. Stephen Ambrose was probably one of the foremost World War II historians of the last, well, since the actual war.
Oh, 100%. Marty Morgan was his one of his researchers, and then was a big deal at the museum.
Yeah.
Marty came with us.
Oh, shit.
So we went to Braycourt Manor. And we got the whole Band of Brothers tour, and then the tour moved on. And Marty's like, "You want the real story?
Yeah.
I'll give you the real story." So I got to go everywhere. I got to go Cherbourg. We stayed in St. Mary Glees. Wow. So I got to march through Caratan. I got to see and learn a part of history that I could. And then I got to jump. I got to jump Mike DZ.
Right.
61 years later, we missed the drop zone again. The winds were so bad.
I mean, it just goes to show that the winds are the winds, and the
winds are the winds.
Terrain is their terrain.
Yeah, brand new aircraft, and we still miss the damn drop zone.
So, you know, I went to the police academy with a guy. He, after 9/11, he decided his carpet installation business was not cutting it for him. And at 39 years old, he went to the sheriff's academy. And he was a fire hydrant of a man. But he made it, and he spent, you know, a good 15 years as a cop after that. And then he has been on the show. He had already been skydiving and was certified skydiving in his personal life, went for the 75th anniversary and did the full static line out of the freaking, you know, old prop planes in full gear, period, correct gear, and was part of the group that jumped with one of the original 101st Airborne, who was now in his 90s, and they did a tandem. So this guy's 100, you know, almost 100 years old, and he's doing a, you know, baby Bjorn tandem jump with another paratrooper to let him recreate his same jump 75 years later. And he said it was, he would co-sign with you. He said it was one of the most memorable things he's ever done.
It's incredible. Like I said to you earlier, I was at a 175 Charlie Company reunion last weekend, down in Tavares, Florida. And we actually, I jumped static line with them, and we jumped into a lake there. We jumped the Tico Bell, and it was a C-47 that had seen service in Normandy. So
So
I got to load up on a Normandy aircraft and jump that last weekend as a civilian. It was really cool. That's awesome. Yeah.
That's now, my grandpa flew.
Full now, static line and everything, huh?
Yeah, I wasn't too... Everyone says I'm a snob. Later on, I became free fall. So, like, I hadn't done static line in like 15 years. I'm like, everyone's like, oh, I hope you know how to do your body position. I'm like, I'm just going to fall out of this plane. I mean, I don't
right.
I'm used to a little different. So, but it was fun. It was a great experience. Yeah. None of the alligators got us. Everybody got away scot free. One of my buddies, this guy Chris, he's double amputee, and he used to train with and. Now as a civilian, he trains his dog. He jumped his Malinois. So that was pretty cool. He was on my stick.
Oh, that's cool.
Watching him go out was pretty neat. So it was a good experience last weekend.
That's awesome.
So after all of this, I swear, I'm scrolling through our social media feed while we're talking, and the damn computer listens to you, because now I'm getting a something in my feed about Remembrance Day, and it's literally showing footage from D-Day's airborne invasion. So I swear the damn computer, like we talked about earlier, somebody's always listening.
But yeah,
with all of your experiences, you have parlayed that into writing a book?
Kind of.
Okay.
So my book is not a military book. It's about a military member, and I discuss some of it's he's got a little bit of PTSD, some of his flashbacks. So the book is not, like I said, inherently military, but in the things he does, I tried to use military experience to kind of tell the story, if you would. you know, at his actions. The actions he takes is based on his military training. So, again, it's not a, you know, I had the privilege of talking to Jack Carr about 6 months ago. He and I had about a 30-minute phone call, mutual friend.
Oh, wow.
And we were just talking about the differences in the way he's got a copy of my book, the differences in our books and the approaches we took. So again, you know, his stuff, love it, but his is a little bit more kind of, well, the sequels have jumped, but a little bit more military focused, where mine is not a military book, military influenced. I think it's the best way to say it.
Oh, nice. It's a post-military book.
What's that?
It's a post-military book, right?
It is.
But see, that tracks with what your current experiences are, because you're talking about, you know, you are no longer in the military. You're just living your life, your best life after the military. And so I think that probably speaks to what you're experiencing now more than necessarily if you'd written it during your service, maybe you would have written it with a different perspective.
Well, I actually started it as I was retiring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My last
year. It's been a long work in progress.
Yeah. It took me about 3 years, but that's because, one, I have a full-time job.
Well, there's
Two, learning the process, you know, I had to go through DOD security review, learning how formatting on the computer, you know, again, just typing away is not all of it. So it took me a while to find my groove, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. And I understand I have started, but I've never finished. It's difficult to find that pocket, that sweet spot. So, tell our listeners about the book. Where can they find it? What's it called? You know, plug your book, man. You're terrible at this PR thing.
I know, right? I'm terrible. So it's called it's called Jones Point. It's up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookshop.org. And again, it's about a special operations soldier. He's overseas, so that is the military part. And he and his daughter's kidnapped, and he comes home, and his life just falls apart. I mean, she's gone. And it gets him at his rock bottom, alcoholic, about to lose his job. And he gets recruited. And there's a group of, originally it started just fathers, but I realize that mothers have lost children too, but it's a club. And they take the law in their own hands. And not everybody's a shooter. I mean, you got logisticians, you've got cops, you've got, you know, just a myriad of people that they all work together to hunt each other's cases. And there's side stories. There's FBI that's chasing them. There's Virginia Bureau of Investigation that's investigating crimes and
so the GBI.
Yep. So, you know, just basically he's a tortured soul. He's just going on a crusade to either find his daughter or help as many kids as he can until he does.
Now, how much of you is in this?
That's funny. My wife always says that. She's like, that sounds like you. So it's obviously not me. I'm not that egotistical, but A lot of the scenarios, you know, dealing with a cop or dealing with this, you know, dealing with the FBI giving me a report on missing children, you know, and they're getting nowhere. How would I react? So a lot of it is me saying is how I would approach the situation. Then some of the acts he takes, that's when I will go back on some of my military experiences. All right, I got to find this guy. How would I find him? How would I get in his house? How would I question him? Things like that. So that's, again, it's fiction, but I tried to bring some realism into it. And I have, like I said, my sister's a cop. I have a couple of good friends here. I've got a couple of FBI friends. So when I did it, you know, I would sit down with them with certain chapters and let's try to get some realism in this. I don't want to just be, you know, you know, speaking out of my ass.
Wild things. Right. Yeah. I mean, like if I'm sitting down and writing a book, I'm going to call my military friends to get the military stuff. And I would hope they would call me to get the cop stuff or the narco stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. That makes sense. Well, you guys should definitely check it out. I'd love to read a copy of it. It's called Jones Point. It's available. I'm looking at the link right now. It's on Amazon. You can get a copy through Amazon.com. And it's Sean Haggerty is the author. Sean, it's been great. We love having guys like you on where the time flies when we just kind of sit and rap, you know?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, right.
It's a good thing.
But we always want to give our guests a chance to dedicate their episode, their interview to anyone they would like to. And so we wanted to give you a chance to dedicate your episode if you'd like. Otherwise, we can always dedicate the episode to someone we have.
No, I actually would. So Ranger Lozier left us, Ranger Regiment, went in the private sector. And actually the other day was his 14th anniversary of his passing in Afghanistan. He passed from IED May 6th, 2010. So, yep, Ranger Lozier, Ryan, guys called him DJ. He's always in our thoughts. One for the Airborne Ranger in the sky.
There you go. Well, lift your glasses, boys. Rest easy, brother. We've got it from here. And Chuck, what do you got for us as we close out?
Well, I want to say we hunt the monsters who hunt our children. That's taken from the book. And just to let you guys know, Jones Point is placed third in the psychological thriller category of the 2024 Book Fest.
Oh.
Yeah, I just figured I'd put that out there because it wasn't put out there. And
we've already identified that Sean's terrible at marketing.
Terrible.
Sean, I want to say thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Thank you everyone for listening today. If you like today's podcast, the content we provide, please help us out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, Spotify, YouTube, whatever. Our podcast is available on all major podcasting platforms as well as on YouTube. You can always help us out by going to our Instagram at war_stories_official and our Facebook at War Stories Podcast. If you already follow us, please like and share our posts on our social media. You can also go to the link on our bios on Instagram and Facebook and get all of our links. You can get to the emails. You can get to our website. You can get to the YouTube. You can get to all the podcast stuff. You can also support us by going to www.warstoriesofficial.com, grab some gear. And if you want to be featured on the show, please go to booking.warstories@gmail.com. Again,
yeah,
that is booking.
Dot was not mailbag. Mailbag is when you want to ask us a question or, you know, booking.warstories@gmail.com. Yeah. Or you can actually DM us as well. Chuck will answer you there. Booking.warstories@gmail.com.
I don't know how many more times we could say it. It's booking.warstories@gmail.com. And if you DM me, I will give it to you, or I'll tell you to go to the link in the bio and just take exactly what you put on the DM and just copy paste it straight to an email. That way I can save it, because if you let it ride in that DM, it's going to disappear. It's going to disappear, and I'm not going to be able to find it because I won't remember your name. So if you'd like to be featured on the show, we're always looking for veterans, law enforcement, firefighters, medics, also corrections officers, dispatchers, and nurses. And if you have a friend who you think would be a great fit or has some stories they would want to share, you can give them that booking.warstories@gmail.com email, link us up. And if you want to just share your story, but you don't want to come on the show, you can always write in your story and we can always read it on the show.
Yep.
And go about it that way. But go to booking.warstories@gmail.com. We can get you booked.
Yeah, we can always read it on a debrief. We'll make time.
Yeah.
During our emails. But Sean, thank you again.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We'd love to have you back. I'm gonna try and get a copy of your book and read it. So
I want to try to get into some of the special forces, some special operations stuff as much as we can.
The stuff that he can't talk about.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'll come out there, we'll have a couple beers somewhere and we can talk.
Yeah. I mean, when we're sitting here going, he's like, I've been to Africa, I just can't tell you where.
you know what the craziest thing was? Is he's like, the scariest time that I've had was sitting in traffic and people were just being executed in front of me, not saying where the fuck he was,
right,
what he was doing there, why he was just in this up armored.
I was going to work. I was just driving to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a crazy place to work. Right. And you know, it's just the anonymity of everything and how he's explaining it. It's just like, fuck, dude, I just want to know so much more.
Well, again, thanks, Sean.
Thanks, guys.
And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.